Hey, in this week's podcast, I talk about what it's like to work on an independent movie and be called to work 5 hours early and go to the cafe instead, my opinion of the parking attendant, and a show that I did for Amazon that was picked up and dropped, and also a conversation I had about the reboot of 24. Tune in.
Today, what are you thinking about when you're walking down the street? Is your head in a cloud? Don't you want to know what's going on? Let's go! Checking in with Mary Lynn. Checking in with Mary Lynn. Checking in with Mary Lynn. Let's check in with Mary Lynn.
Hey everyone, good news. If you're listening from Arizona, Indianapolis, Texas, Washington, or Wisconsin, I will be performing in a city near you very soon. You can get tickets on my website, marylynnmarylynn.com. Thanks for listening. I appreciate the reviews. Please continue to rate, review, and subscribe. Let's get it going. Podcast Nation. Oh God. So embarrassed when I try to get hype, I just say dumb things. People don't know what they're doing most of the time, including myself. I always feel behind, like I could do a little bit more. But what I'm talking about, what I'm thinking about right in this moment is going to work today on an independent movie and the parking attendant. First of all, can I just say it's taken me days to figure out where to park in relation to walking to the set and which way to turn in the parking garage, because there's a doorway that takes you to the set, and then the other way, if you go out the way you came in, you have to go around like a couple city blocks, and it's been really hot, oppressively hot. Anyway, I go in there, and by this time, I know what I'm doing. This is about my 6th day coming to this set. In the first 2 to 3 to 4 days, I was a little bit discombobulated, but now I know which way to turn in the parking garage, and I know which door to go out. But I see this attendant, this security guy, sort of ambling towards me. I don't know how you can walk with purpose and aimlessly at the same time, but he managed to pull off that look. I could just tell by his energy. But he was coming towards me, but he wasn't sure. And just his vibe was stressing me out, because right as I noticed him was when I also was noticing that all the spots were filled up, because my call time was later in the day. It was noon, but it was still too early. Oh boy, those of you that don't know the movie business, hurry up and wait. The old classic, this is super insider, guys. Hey, hashtag tell me if your job ever does this to you. When they call, my call time is 2:15 p.m., which means the order of events for that day, the order of scenes that they're doing, they know that leaves you enough time, your call time, to get ready, get in wardrobe, get in makeup, and then you get called to set. And they're always estimating based on how long they think each scene will take to shoot. So today, my call was 2:15 p.m. They've started at 7:30. That means they've got quite a few things to do before, you know, they're going to call me in there. So they call and say, hey, can you come in at 12 noon? And it's always the people that are, you know, the assistants that have to relay this and try to get it cranking, because it comes from higher up, like, oh, we're moving faster, can you come in? And I say yes, and then I get there and end up not working until 5 p.m. Okay, maybe 4 p.m. It was a little bit of an exaggeration. Maybe 3 p.m., maybe 4 p.m. But, and lunch was at 1:30, so that was another classic. I get there at noon, end up ordering this really expensive food from Cafe Gratitude. Gosh, I almost feel like there should be a podcast on Cafe Gratitude. If you're in LA, I wonder if they're anywhere else in the country. All their food dishes are called, like, I am grateful. They're all phrases. I am sparkling. I am loving. I am strong. They're all positive affirmations. So each item on the menu, I am whole, represents some affirmation. It is the queerest thing. But I love it. I would eat at that restaurant every day because it's these bowls that you would never make yourself. Like the one I had, I don't even remember what was in the one I had today. I was going to get another one, and then I had order envy because my makeup lady, Lexi, was getting one. And then I was like, oh man, like what if you get your bowl and then your bowl is better than my bowl? So my bowl brings all the boys to the yard. You're in my milkshake. Okay. So hers had lentils and brown rice and some kind of spinach and some kind of chutney and yams. The food is really good and it's really healthy and organic and vegetarian, vegan. The whole restaurant is vegan. Is that right? I can't remember. I actually just looked at the menu quickly and I don't have it fresh in my mind like the first time I experienced it where I was really taking it all in. Oh, and then they have this key lime pie that is made out of, yeah, it must be vegan because it's all plant-based. So the key lime pie is made out of cashews. I'm telling you, the consistency, I don't know what they do. They must, like, liquefy cashews and then make it into some type of a creamy goodness, and it's super limey, and then the top. I mean, look, I'm going to hand it to you. It's not like a regular key lime pie in terms of the creaminess, but it has its own creamy texture, and by its own creamy texture, I mean it's its own flavor palette, but it's not bullshit or cardboard. It's actually quite lovely and limey and creamy, and it has graham cracker crust, and I don't really know how they pull that off either with all these holistic things. So anyway, now as I'm talking about this, I realize that I have a pretty good job because I got there and I was able to order food, really expensive food, probably a chunk out of my pay for the day. Order it, walk, go pick it up, eat it. I also got french fries and key lime pie, plus that bowl. I was starving. I ate it so fast I didn't even realize I was eating it. And then I took a nap, and this was all before I got called to set. I mean, I don't want you people that are not in the film business to think I have it so easy. Well, I guess I do, let's be honest. But it comes with its own set of things that will make you crazy. Because then when it's go time, you have to give a certain thing. You have to be on in a certain way and vulnerable and available and have people up in your space and people touching you, and you have to deliver a certain thing that requires an essence of yourself. I think describing this sounds like I really love my job. I guess I do. So it's just different. And as jobs go, it is a really, really good job. But I'm just saying that to say it's not all cushy and dreams and smooth. There's a lot of, especially people that are not the actors. I do think actors work really hard, but especially people who are on the crew. Could you hear that? Rescue dog Leo shaking up. He did a big whole body shake. People who are there for the project just grinding it. I mean, actors are there for a lot of the time too, but just that are sort of don't get to have these breaks that we get to have where we can step away from set and come back. And they're there setting up all the shots hour after hour. It's a weird, interesting set of, like, it was really hot where we were today and we were in cubicles. You have to be a certain kind of person to put up with that, you know? I'm sure there's all kinds of respect. It'd be cool to do a job diagram of the levels of shittiness and cushiness and why. Because I'm not complaining. I do have a really cool job, but there's just a lot of shit that comes along with it too. Not to mention the unpredictability of it. You know, I think that's something that I crave sometimes, is predictability and what my family back home would call stability. I remember I had a cousin who, right before I was about to leave and go to London for 5 months to shoot the reboot of 24, the massively popular hit show I was on. I don't think there's any chance that somebody listening to this podcast wouldn't know what that show is. But so it went off the air for a couple years, like it was done, and then they brought back a special installment of it in London. And, you know, there's, to me, it's logical that there's no way I'm not going to do that. I mean, I tried to play hard to get and negotiate, and they basically were like, this is how much money we can pay. And I said, okay, because it was more money than I would make doing anything else, but it still was, whatever, that's not the important part of the story. The point I'm making is that this is the nature of my job. This is a show that I've done that's been the most popular, the most lucrative while it was happening. Not in residuals, as people assume. Let me just go ahead and make that clear. I do not make back pay now. I was not a producer on that show, and we do not receive residuals from it, like the Friends do. It was not that type of show. That's a whole other conversation. Have I podcasted about that before? Okay. So yeah, I'm sign me up to do the reinstallment. This is exciting. Plus, on top of that, what's even more exciting, and here's how you know I'm an artist, and I guess anybody whose job, the actual job that you enjoy, do you ever have these moments where the money doesn't matter? I mean, the money is nice, it's sweet, but I'm telling you, the thing that I was more excited about, what, like, for example, I'm doing a lot of sidetracks, but I'm coming back to all of them. So just hang on. I once did this pilot for Amazon, and it was a really lovely cast, and the team that were the producers and directors were a couple that I had worked with before, who were the directors of a movie called Put in the Sunshine, and they were doing a show for Amazon, and they hired me along with Curtis Armstrong, who you may remember from the Revenge of the Nerds. He played the wacky uncle. And Chris Parnell was my husband. Lewis Pullman was the star of the show. And it was called Heistin. And it was about this kid who was splitting from reality. But it was lighthearted. And he had this imaginary world. And the mom and dad, me, we represented this stiff reality where we just wanted him to get a job and be normal, and we were out of touch with what was really going on with him, and we didn't know what to do, but we were very sweet and caring, but we just didn't understand. And then if you would see what was happening in his imaginary world, he would always be talking to famous people. And so you would cut to him talking to his imaginary friends, and it would be Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers or Shaq. And so there's a scene where he's talking and playing drums in his room, and we're outside really concerned. But as a viewer, his interior world was so exciting and lovely, and sort of gave him this boost of confidence, and he had this level of engagement, but it wasn't with the world at large. And his parents were, you know, at this crossroads of, if he didn't get a job soon, they were going to put him in psychiatric care. So the end of the pilot is he goes into psychiatric care, and he develops a crush on this woman, and they're going to run in group therapy, and then he busts out of there. So it's this study of, like, I mean, again, as an audience, you're rooting for him to break out of there. You almost want his imaginary world, and then it's kind of clever. I mean, there's all these jokes involved with, I think originally it was in the script, it was what's his name, Christopher Walken, and that was pretty funny because I imagined that it would always be Christopher Walken that he was talking to, and that's, so when I first read it, I was really attracted to that. But then it shifted. I was very excited that it was Flea and Shaq. It was such a weird combination, and then I think they were playing with the idea that it would be a different person every time, which I'm not sure that I agreed with, but, you know, going along with it, they think they can make it work, and I trust that. I really liked everybody involved. It was written by Bob Nelson, who's best known for writing the movie Nebraska, which was really enjoyable, and he had, like, a dry sense of humor and really imaginative, but yet somehow grounded. Anyway, so this pilot got picked up because they liked everybody involved, and Amazon was so cool and paid pretty well, and they picked it up for 6. But we had to wait. They kept extending our holding, and then they eventually dropped it. So they picked it up for 6, and we all kind of bonded as a cast, and we'll see you soon. And then time goes on. And they ended up not liking the scripts. They didn't come out the way they wanted them to. And they just eventually, after a year, and we got paid. I mean, could you imagine? That's the first time in my life where I got paid the holding fee. So you're getting paid for doing nothing. And you're getting paid for the promise of having this job, which is a great feeling. But the more it goes along, the more it's just a bummer, because it's my really long-winded way of saying I really just wanted to do the work. The money is nice. You need money. But I was, the thing I was most bummed about was not seeing those people and not being able to do that world that we created and not being able to see what happened with it, because you get invested. And, you know, I had my podcast a while back about quitting auditioning, and, you know, I'm kind of auditioning again. I just have to, hold on, there's a dog and cat fight. You guys, okay, that time I really did, excuse me, lose my train of thought, but I think I made my point about, I was just saying that I was going to go off on another tangent, which is, not only is every job you're invested in, and that's not really a tangent, because it speaks to being on set. You're invested in this way. It's just a weird job. That's what I'm saying. It's cushy and nice, but it's odd, and it takes a lot out of you in a different way. And sometimes you don't get paid, and sometimes you don't get what you want, and sometimes you go through long periods where nothing's happening and there's no guarantee of happening. Which I'm sure a lot of people have jobs like that. Again, got to make that job diagram of best and worst, and what it's like, and why, and how. Okay. Anyway. Yeah. That's what I'm saying about the show Heiston. Oh, here's a fun, weird tidbit about being on this show. So I mentioned Chris Parnell and I. Our house was like this, what's the word? Anachronistic? What does that mean? Like, of another time, right? So the house was very dusty and not even 70s, but just antique-y and old-fashioned and of another era and sort of muddied colors and analog, very analog. Maybe from the 70s, maybe just who knows what time it was from. Not even cool like the 70s, just like very uncool and stuffy. And since I'm so cool, I had to change my hair. No, I don't know how it came about, but we were talking about the mom hair I was going to have. So I had this short, curly wig, and the woman who was doing my hair is so great. We knew each other from years ago, but she did Nacho Libre, and she had a wig left over. Now, I can't imagine this would be the actual wig, unless you can completely, must have been one of the wigs, but that Jack Black wore in Nacho Libre, and it was like our little secret, and I wore it to be the mom, and I just was looking forward to being that person. So that never happened. Back to the second tangent, which was the 24 show. I have a cousin back in Michigan, and I don't often get to talk to my extended family very much there and really get down to their opinions about things. When I do get to see a whole group of them, it's a lot of small talk. So it was a nice conversation I got to have with a cousin of mine, and she was questioning, it was just odd to me, because in my mind it's like, how would you even question that I was going to do that 24 thing installment in London? Oh, and that's what I started to say about the character, about the money, and of course I'm going to do it, but like, even on top of that, there was further development of my character, which I thought the series of 24 ended. Now, it sort of went in an exaggerated way. I became this, like, dark, underground, grifter. I can't remember, a hacker, like, anti-government, which was in reaction to what happened. And, you know, I had, like, leather and piercings and all this eyeliner. And so that was really exciting to do a character that I had done before, but deepen it and add these layers and do the stuff that was unexpected. And that's what was great about it. Plus, that is my stability. This was one of the most stable jobs, you know, that I knew people would be watching. I knew they were good for the money. I knew it wasn't going to not go through. And so she said to me, but are you sure you want to do that? You know, that's not very stable. And it kind of blew my mind, because it's like, I don't understand why there would even be a question that I was doing it. But I guess in her mind, it's like how you drop everything and the stability of your home life. And it's like, those are the choices I've been making since I started doing this occupation. And that's just part of the game. Back to my original tangent, was driving in the parking garage. I guess I just went off on a whole other thing about where you find your stability and how. And it's not really pertinent where I started out, but it was just knowing where I was parking. I was turning around. Oh, yeah, and the guy was coming towards me. And then he said, hey, are you with production? And he ended up being really sweet, but that's what it was. I was nervous because there were no parking spaces where I thought I was going to, so he directed me to another part of the garage, which I already knew, but he didn't know that I knew, and I was like, thank you. And then when I saw him later, I was walking back. No, I was coming back from Cafe Gratitude. It's all coming full circle. And it was super hot. I was like 100 degrees. So I couldn't see. It's through this huge apartment complex to cut through the block instead of going all the way around. And I said, can I get through? And he's staring at me. And I realized he has no idea. This guy stands at his podium, and he literally does not know where he's at, even though he's standing right there and he's guarding the parking garage. And again, he was really sweet about it, but he went from earlier in the day, he's the expert, you know, he's like hey, there's more parking there, all confident. And then I throw him off by simply asking if I can cut through that way. And he says, oh, well, and I said, he goes, where are you going? Which was pretty fair, like a manly thing. Like, well, you tell me where you're going and I'll help you. I said, I'm trying to get to traction. That's near the street. And I go, I don't want to walk around. It's through the garage, right? Because I wanted to go on the sidewalk. I felt weird by walking through the garage, and I knew the door in the garage went through. And he's like, try it. It should work. This fucking guy. It's like a person working at a kiosk in a mall where they just have blinders on and they go straight to their kiosk and they have no idea of their surroundings. And they're like, okay, so you pay me and I stand here, but I don't know even the perimeter of the very building that I'm in right now. I know the parking garage and that's it. Okay, so I guess full circle comes down to like just a diss of this parking attendant. But the larger picture is like, we don't know where we're at. We're not invested in things. And he's doing his job and he's nice, but, and I'm not saying I'm any better. I'm just saying like, where are we in our society where we don't even really know the streets that we're on and we don't care to know and we don't have to know and it's not our job. Very bizarre. All right. Thanks for listening.